In this session, titled Repercussion from Change in Key Personnel, Dr. Schleifer addresses the risks of losing or adding key personnel to a construction organization. The loss or addition of key people creates a new and untested management team and puts the company immediately at risk. People who have succeeded separately or in different groups cannot automatically be incorporated successfully into a new group. Each new group needs to prove its ability to work together and make a profit. The new group may or may not be profitable, but because the continuing growth of the company covers so much that before potential problems occur, a true test may never develop. And now, let's join Dr. Schleifer.
Change in key personnel. Our companies, I said earlier, are the sum and substance of our experience. One of the problems with the small and mid-size construction enterprise, and to a great, some extent the larger companies, is all of that expertise, all of that experience is captured in people. Right? The sum and substance of your experience is not written down somewhere. It's not captured in your production manuals. It's your people. Now, somebody leaves the company. Right? We lose one of our key people. They're off working for somebody else. Maybe they had a heart attack. Maybe they just got old. They're gone. We replace them and move on like nothing happens often in this business when we've lost some of the key ingredients for our success. Now, if I tell you I've replaced my estimator and I'm getting lots of jobs right now, it's pretty funny, right? In a year or two, I'm going to find out whether that's a good deal, but I've lost the key guy. Loss of a founder. Boy, there's a effect on a company. In fact, the failure rate in succession in our industry is huge. We lose a founder or he retires, the company's changed. I'll bet in some cases even for the better. But too suddenly, it's changed. It's different. The magic has moved. Who's working for whom? I was doing this piece of this seminar in Florida at one time. The state of Florida uses contractor licensing money to provide free seminars and other educational opportunities for the contractors in that state. And I was hired by the state to take this seminar around to several locations based on using their licensing funds. I'm doing this part of a talk, and a guy raises his hand, big audience, it was like a movie theater, and he says, my partner and I started this company 12 years ago from scratch, and we drove it to $20 million a year annual volume, he said, and we just got divorced. He said, we just split up. My partner's gone. I bought him out. What should I do? Well, it's not a lot of detail, you know, to be answering such a question, and I don't want to lead him astray. So I pause for a minute. I often use a pause for effect, and everyone quiets down, and they're looking at him and wondering if I'm going to answer him. And I said to him, and I was serious, I said, I don't know enough detail to tell you what to do or what might happen, what your exposure is. But I can tell you, it wouldn't be a bad time to panic. And I meant it. I said, and I'll tell you why. Unless your partner was doing nothing within this organization, and I realize a lot of us have partners we think are doing nothing, or very little. That happens in our business. But, and I just made light of that. I said, unless you think he was doing nothing, you both put your heads together, put your energy together, put your knowledge together, put the contacts and the people that you're involved with, and produce $20 million worth of work at a profit. What that proves is that you're capable of putting $10 million worth of work in at a profit. Think about that. Most of us are sitting around saying, everybody could leave this organization and I'd still build it and bid it and make it the same way, and it's just not true. Now, everyone in the company is not key. There are people in your company that if they left, nothing changes. So you need to figure out who's key. Often it's our production people. I worked for a company where we did open warehouses. That's all we built. And for our own, we were owned by the company we built the warehouses for. The only place we made any money was foundations, flat work, or block, because that's all there was. Everything else was subbed out, and there was very little place for us to make our unit. Flat work was a big deal in this company, and there was a labor foreman. He'd be assigned to any one of our big jobs, but any time we poured floors, he came to the site and ran the pours. The cement finisher foreman listened to him. The superintendent listened to him. This guy was powerful because we made a ton of money on our floors. That labor foreman, we built 4, 5, 8 buildings a year. That labor foreman, Porter Malt, was key to the success of that company. So we usually have production people in that loop. We usually have the owners or founders and key estimators or key accounting persons or whoever they are. What you need to do to measure that, a key person in your organization is defined, I define as, a person who, if they weren't there, the company would be different. Any person that if he wasn't there or she wasn't there, the company's different. And if you use that measurement, you'll know who's key. And on a small and medium-sized, closely held companies, that could be 3, 4, 5, 7 people. It could be a very low number. Well, if one of them is gone, then we're like this guy in Florida. All we've proved is we could do this amount of work, bid, build, and collect for at a profit, but without him, that amount is lower. Or it might all fall apart. It's a major exposure for us. Let me talk about a company, it was a rather large company. This particular company was in the Midwest, in the Rust Belt, did a lot of work for the auto industry, industrial construction company. Two partners started it. They were very successful. From no volume, they drove it over about 25, 30 years to $90 million annual volume. They weren't 3 or 4 years old before they realized that they had no control over their accounting process. They were builders, and they knew how to get the work and do it, but they never knew where they stood. And they brought in an accounting type and gave him stock in that company in order to control their business. And then they took off. They grew it like crazy, and this guy watched the books and records, and he was a partner. The accounting type got crossways with the other two partners over an issue where one of the partners wanted to buy a design company. There was an old guy in town that was going to retire from his design firm, and it was for sale, cash only. And they felt, and he designed a lot of the auto work they did, particularly the shutdown work. 6-week shutdown in the summer, these guys are doing an awful lot of work in an auto plant. And if they could control the shop drawings and the designing, offer a turnkey service, they thought they'd be better off. So they want to get into the design, build, offer, and they want to buy this company. Well, the accounting guy says we can't afford it. And they even had outside board members. It gets all the way to the board of directors level when the accounting type is saying, we can't afford, with the ups and downs in our business, to take this risk, and the board votes on it, and they don't buy the company. A couple of years later, the guy takes a heart attack. Doesn't die, but he doesn't come back to work. Big retirement party, and he goes away. Now, the issue comes back up about buying this firm because it had never sold. They got a new accounting guy, chief financial officer, 3-piece suit. Guy looks like an accountant, talks like an accountant. He smells like an accountant, right? This guy is sharp, CPA and an MBA. I mean, you can trust him. He goes to the board of directors and puts up all kinds of charts and graphs, financial issues, and says, we can handle the debt service for this company. We can afford to buy this organization. And they do. Borrow $1 million from the bank, term loan, buy the design company, and off they go. 6-8 months later, we have the oil crisis. Anybody remember waiting in line for oil? There wasn't gas. Well, what does the auto industry do? They think they're not going to sell any cars or, worse, trucks. They cut back dramatically on production. This guy has contracts actually canceled. Some postponed, some actually canceled, some illegally canceled. What's the difference between a legal canceled and illegal canceled contract? Nothing. We still don't have the work to do. We don't have the cash flow coming out of it. We were talking about a contractor that had brought an accounting person in early in the first generation of their business because they knew that they needed to keep control of their accounting work. And I wanted to use this particular story because it's easy to see if we lose a founder, or if we lose the vice president in charge of all construction, or if we lose the chief estimator, it's pretty obvious that we need to make sure that the replacement really works. But here we lost our chief financial officer, which you would think you could replace, because you'd think accounting's accounting. But all of the key people in the company have what the company needs. It's experience, its information, the sum and substance of its entire experience envelope in their head. They have it, and when they leave, it's gone. The new accountant said, we can afford this company. And he had charts and graphs, and he's concentrated on the debt service. That is, the interest cost, which is truly the only expense to a company. We need to think about that for a minute. If you go out and buy some horribly expensive plasma machine that costs $100,000, and you borrow $100,000, you don't hurt your balance sheet. Because you put on the asset side a $100,000 piece of equipment, you put on the liability side a $100,000 loan, it's kind of a push. Now, you just take $100,000 out of your business, or lose $100,000, that's a different story. It's a one-way street. Well, this guy's talking about the debt service, the interest expense. We're going to buy a $1 million company, make it a subsidiary. So we're going to put that on our asset side. We're going to borrow $1 million, put it on our balance sheet side. Nothing happens. But they took a term loan, and he says the interest, which is the expense to the company, X amount a year, we can afford. But they also had to make the principal payments. So the oil crisis hits. The auto companies, their primary clients, begin to do less work. Their contracts get canceled. Their volume takes a 30% hit in 6 months and continues down over the following 6 months. If volume goes down, what happens to cash flow? In theory, volume should go down and we'd still be profitable, but that's not true either. We take a 30% hit in volume, I guarantee you we're losing money on top of it because we can't wean off overhead that rapidly. So they start losing money and they have no cash flow. The bank gets a nervous wreck. The accountant with the three-piece suit and the MBA and the CPA races into the bank and he restructures the loan. However, the cash flow continues to get worse. He hadn't anticipated the losses in addition to just the drop-off in cash flow, and he attempts to restructure it a second time within 8 or 10 months, and the bank won't have any part of it. In fact, he makes the bank gets so nervous, they call the loan. In the case of the company we're talking about, they restructured twice. The bank called the note. The surety heard about that, cut off all bonding, and the rest is history. What happened to that company was a loss or a change in key personnel. They bought that engineering company after they lost somebody who knew better and who could convince others that he knew better because he understood the risk of that organization. He'd been with it for 25 or 30 years, whatever age, I forget the company was, and he had seen the ups and downs in their growth. They were tremendously successful. Anybody grows from zero to 90 million is a big company, and they were profitable. But he remembers running out of cash. He remembers that doing all that was not easy. And the down years where he had to scramble to keep everything together, he knew that they couldn't afford it. He also understood that when you sign a term loan, you pay back the principal and the interest. The other accountant was saying, it will cost us this amount of interest per year. We make this amount of money, therefore we can afford this interest. But when they first got in trouble on the loan, it wasn't that they not only couldn't pay interest, they couldn't pay the term payments. The monthly payment included principal. And it seems simple in retrospect, but that was a change in key personnel. When we lose anyone that's key to our organization, it changes us and it changes our risk pattern. It changes our ability to profit. The magic is gone. That which makes up the sum and substance of our experience is altered. To what extent? You're the judge of that. The starting point is to determine who's key and to get everybody in the organization to recognize that and understand it. And then to determine how we're going to deal with it if we lose one. If they're aging, we know they're going to lose. We're going to lose them. We may not have the time to make contingency plans for everyone, but I want to tell you, if we've got somebody really key in the 35 to 40 year old bracket or even the 30 to 45 year old bracket, your competition is going to be after that person over the next several years because the volume in our industry is moving up and the total number of people to do the work is not. There's something else that happens in our small, medium, and larger closely held construction enterprises, and that is someone supplies the energy. Someone comes to work and supplies what makes the company go. Doesn't mean they're type A personalities jumping around and bouncing off the walls. It's simply that there are people that stabilize organizations, that provide the energy, that are positive when things are down, that cause things to happen. We typically notice in the loss of a founder. There are loyalties that run to that founder. I've watched companies where the founder retires and within 2 or 3 years, 8 or 9 of the key people out of 20 are gone. They either are similar in age and retire themselves, or they really wanted to work for that guy. There's a lot of hero worship in our industry. And when he's gone, they don't want to work for the remaining managers. That's not what makes them happy. It's not what turns them on, and they're off working for somebody else. If I lost a really key person like a partner, the ideal thing would be to do less work, but that's impossible. We're on a moving train. You can't just walk into your company tomorrow and say, I can do less work. I mean, it's impossible. We put on such permanent overhead. We have drop-dead volumes. In fact, my experience in the turnaround business is I am unable to draw a company's size down rapidly, that's within 1 year, more than 25% without permanently changing that company. But it'd be nice if I lose a key person right there, if I could stop growing for a while. Say 1 year. Why a year? That's the way we measure ourselves. Let's see if now that we've got this new estimator or this new vice president in charge of construction or who knows who is new, let's see if as a team we can bid, build, and collect for profitable work for a whole year, for a get a positive financial statement out. And then I could commence my same growth pattern. I realize this is very theoretical because you can't manage it this closely. But in theory, that's what I'd want to do. If I did not do that, suppose I hire this guy's replacement and I just keep growing. And at the end of 1 year, it's not working. He's in estimating and he's not bringing in any work. Worse, he's in estimating, he's bringing in a lot of work. He's in charge of construction and I'm dropping a point or two. I mean, nothing's going right. The people don't like him. I got a mess on my hands. I can sense it, let alone see it. So I've got a problem. What do? I have to get rid of him. Or supplement him or train him or do something. Say I get rid of him, I hire another guy and stay growing. Right? Everyone's seeing the risk now compound itself. I'm still allowing my organization to grow, but I've had a change here. I've had another change there. I'm really at risk by continuing that growth. So while I realize that you can't lose a key person and immediately stop growing, one would at least think about it. Maybe I lose a key person and I've got a couple of really big jobs coming and I think, well, I'll back off bidding a couple of them. I just don't want to overload my company right now till I get this squared away, till I find out how I'm going to replace this person. Suppose without losing any key people, in a period of 0 to say 5 years, I grow at a compounded rate of say 20 or 25%. How much bigger is my company? Double and then some. 25% would double in about 3 years if you take the compounding, 3 years and 3 months or 4 months. So I'm out here 3-5 years, I'm double and a half what I was. I now have a change in key personnel. I've just described this example as no one has left the organization. I've lost no one. But I'm undergoing a change in key personnel by dilution. I now have 2 or 3 times more work to do. I have a need for 2 or 3 times more key people, unless I can work the ones I had to death. So I bring on key people. I put them in responsible roles because I have to. Still got my chief estimator, but he doesn't have just one takeoff person with him now. He's got 3. Right? I've still got my vice president in charge of all construction, who used to be on every job every day, but he's not on every job every day anymore, is he? Because I got 2.5 times more jobs. He's now hitting them twice a week. So he's got a helper, or someone else doing some of it, or someone else hitting the jobs. So I've got dilution. I've got more key persons. So I expose my company to a change in key personnel risk or a change in key personnel phenomena by allowing it to grow too rapidly. What's too rapidly? You be the judge. It's the American way. If the work's out there, we want it. Change in key personnel by dilution. I guarantee if you double in 3 years or triple in less than five, the people you have, because of their capability and experience, you will be forced to hire above them. You see, we all think that if we're going to grow, all our people grow with us and we'll just keep hiring at the bottom. But that's not the way it works if you grow rapidly. 2 years, double in 3 years or triple in five means I'm going to take either tons more work of the same size or more work of larger size. And no matter what, I'm going to need more key people. But I'm going to need people better than the people I have. I don't mean better human beings. I'm talking about more capable executives with greater experience. I'm going to move into a type of work I've not done before. I'm going to have to hire people in that type of work. And where am I going to get them? I'm not taking them out of schools. I'm not going to universities to interview, because a company that grows rapidly needs what? Experienced people. I'm going to go steal them from other people. So first of all, I'm going to pay them more than I'm paying my own good people. Anybody ever made that mistake? Right? You got a half a dozen highly motivated people, but you need another one, and the only way to get them, you got to overpay that guy. Now, we either quickly go ahead and raise everybody else's pay, which is artificial. I don't guarantee you, when our people, all six of them, get a raise because we hired someone else, they don't like it. They like the money. They don't like the idea, well, if I was worth this yesterday, if I'm worth it today, rather, I was worth it yesterday. It's a demotivator. First nail in our coffin of people leaving. People like to work for certain size companies. Some of your people, if you're small and medium sized, like the idea that they can come in and talk to the president of this company. Even better, the president comes out to the job. So that's why they're there. Now, we triple our size in under 5 years. I guarantee you, you can't get through to the president. His secretary has a secretary. I mean, we've gotten too big. In fact, he doesn't go to the jobs at all. He now goes to accounting meetings and lawyer meetings and owner meetings. In fact, he was the best builder we had, but he never builds anything again. Some hired hand is now building it, who we hired from somebody else, overpaid him, and insulted four of our people. Not saying you have a choice of how to grow, or rather how to replace those people. I'm simply saying, after we've discussed this today, it won't happen to anybody in here and be a surprise. It may still happen. You may opt to do it. But you can now predict it, because that's the way it happens. And if we refuse, and we absolutely insist on pushing our people up, we triple our risk. I've got a guy that can build $20,000 jobs, get in and out, make money for me, run my service department at the same time, and we're doing fine. And now I'm putting him on $500,000 jobs. If he fails, whose fault is that? It's my fault. It's not my guy's fault. He's great. It's just I want to Peter Princel him to death till I can find a size work that he can't do well. So we've got genuine exposure in this key personnel. It was further down our hierarchy of list of experience factors, simply because this one hurt fewer companies compared to change in size, change geographic, change in type. But it is the most insidious because it's hard to see. It's hard to see it coming. If I'm growing at two or three times a healthy pace, I'm doubling myself in 3 years, I'm so busy I don't have time for this thing. Right? Key personnel by dilution, I don't even want to hear it. I'm busy. And it gets by us. And it's too late once we see it. So we really want to keep it in mind. Changing key personnel, changing our company, changing key personnel by dilution. Our companies are the sum and substance of our experience, and that's why we make a profit and enjoy coming to work.